This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The entire EDF research enterprise is about looking at methane as a greenhouse gas and measuring how much is coming out. They're not looking at any of the science involved in well integrity or possible water pollution.
When we think of the potential dangers of fracking for natural gas, what may come to mind is the dramatic image of flaming tap water. But the prospect of methane released in the hydraulic fracturing process goes beyond contaminated groundwater to include poor air quality and accelerated climate change. Researchers have struggled to accurately measure how much methane is released through fracking, and studies vary widely in their findings. This week on Sea Change Radio, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Lisa Song of Inside Climate News joins us to make some sense of the various studies and help us understand the impact of fracking on the air we breathe. We also delve into the political divide among environmental groups as nonprofits like the Environmental Defense Fund break with long-standing allies on the subject. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Lisa Song. She's a reporter for Inside Climate News and has shared the Pulitzer Prize with her colleagues there. Lisa, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So natural gas is an area that has been much discussed on this program, but one thing we haven't really discussed as much is the methane leaks. We're always talking about possible water table issues, but methane gas is 10 times more dangerous to the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, and yet we don't really know much about it and how it gets released in the fracking process. Why don't you take a step back and tell us what listeners should know about methane and fracking?
So methane is the main component of natural gas. When you're drilling for natural gas and the chemicals come up out of the ground, the vast majority of that is methane. And methane itself is a very powerful greenhouse gas. It's actually 34 to 80 something times more powerful than CO2 in terms of its potency for warming the climate. And that's why people are worried about it. So when you're drilling and developing oil and natural gas at various stages in the process, during the drilling, during the fracking, the production or the processing, methane is leaking out of the equipment. It might be leaking out of pipelines or valves. It might be leaking out of the well itself, storage tanks, waste pits. And it's really important for scientists to know exactly how much methane is leaking across the country, because that way they'll be able to understand the effect of natural gas drilling on climate change. And, you know, years ago when the shale boom was just starting, everyone just sort of assumed that natural gas was a bridge fuel, that it was better for climate change than coal, and that it would help lead us into a greener future that was better for climate change. But what happened was, as time went on, more research started coming out, and there began to be doubts about that, because people started realizing if enough methane is leaking out during the process, in some cases, natural gas is actually worse than coal or about the same as coal for the climate. And that's what people are trying to figure out.
So I wanted to dive into the science behind it and the groups that are trying to conduct studies in this area. Maybe let's focus first just on the environmental groups. There's definitely a fracture within environmental groups when it comes to fracking. You did an excellent piece a couple months ago on EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund, and they wanted to do a study trying to measure methane leaks in the natural gas drilling process. EDF has been one of these environmental groups that you spoke of that thinks of natural gas as an important bridge fuel. But there were some problems with the EDF study, weren't there?
So the problem is, if you really want to know how much methane is coming out of this industry, it's a very difficult question to answer. It requires a lot of measurements and a lot of data and a lot of studies, and it's going to cost millions of dollars because every shale basin is probably leaking a different amount. Different wells are leaking different amounts.
So an EDF basically has to go to deeper pocketed groups to try to help fund this effort.
Yeah. So the effort funded by EDF is $18 million total. They're funding 16 studies using various ways to measure methane. And they've gotten this funding through a combination of foundations and also from the oil and gas industry. So EDF has chosen to work with industry, and industry is partially funding the studies as well as giving the researchers access to their property so that scientists can make actual measurements on these well pads. And the researchers involved in these studies is a combination of academic scientists and government scientists, but they're collaborating with the industry as they're doing this work.
And how far along is EDF in this study?
They are intending to publish about 24 peer-reviewed research papers. Most of them are not out yet. They've been trickling out over the past 2 years or so, but it could take a while before all of them are published.
So on one hand, we would see critics saying, well, these oil and gas industries can skew the data to however they want it. On the other hand, people are saying, well, Environmental Defense Fund, EDF, is a green organization that wants to do the best for the environment. After doing a lot of research on this, where do you stand?
So what we found was that nobody really believes that the industry involvement means people are making up data or that they're pressuring the scientists to change the data or skew it in any way. So there isn't really concern about that kind of scientific fraud. There is concern about a lack of transparency in these studies. And also, for example, many of the researchers had to sign non-disclosure agreements when they agreed to help do these studies. And that means what these agreements said was, if you're participating in these studies, you sign some paperwork to say, I can't talk about the results of the study as I'm working on it, but I can talk about it once the final results are published in a peer-reviewed journal. And this kind of stipulation is not unusual when industry funding is involved and when the research is politically sensitive. But what it does is it creates an impediment for the scientific process, because normally when academic scientists are working on a study and they get preliminary results as they're starting to work on it, they will often go to scientific conferences and present those preliminary results to their colleagues. And then their colleagues and others in the field can then critique the results and give them ideas for how they might improve their study design and things like that. In this case, they can't do that because they've signed these non-disclosure agreements.
So will these scientists have access to the secret ingredients that go into the fracking process that gets injected into the ground and some fear leaks into groundwater?
I don't think so, because that chemical injection has to do with water and possible water pollution. And here they're just studying methane. So when they're on the site as a scientist, what they're doing is they're putting instruments up on the valves next to storage tanks or on pipelines, and they're just measuring the gas methane that's coming out. They're not going to be involved in, you know, examining what chemicals are going into the fracking fluid.
So they're purely looking at outcomes, not the process.
Yes. Well, the methane research is fundamentally about air quality, and it's a gas. So it has nothing to do with the fracking process where they're mixing the fracking fluids and injecting them underground. The entire EDF research enterprise is about looking at methane as a greenhouse gas and measuring how much is coming out. They're not looking at any of the science involved in well integrity or possible water pollution.
Breathe, breathe in the air. you're all grown. How you live, how you fly, smiles you'll give and tears you'll cry. All you touch and all you see is all your life.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Lisa Song. She's a reporter at Inside Climate News. Similar to the mystery that surrounds groundwater pollution or possible groundwater pollution, this methane release is still quite a mystery. One of the reasons why an EDF would embark on something like this. What is the incentive for the industry to participate?
Well, the industry representatives I've spoken to say they wanted to participate because they anticipated that the quality of the work would be very high. You know, they wanted their name attached to these studies that would come out in peer-reviewed papers. They wanted to be able to say, you know, we have opened our doors to these high-quality researchers, these top-notch researchers from academic institutions. We've allowed them to measure the methane coming out of our sites, and they are interested in the results as well. They want to get accurate numbers.
So are we then to assume that the industry is confident that the conclusions from studies like the EDF one won't be damaging to their business?
I don't think so. I don't think you can say that. Some of the researchers I've spoken to say at certain sites they've seen higher emissions than they've expected. And the first study that came out from the EDF series found certain types of equipment emitted much more methane than everyone had previously thought, including the EPA. And other pieces of equipment were emitting much less methane than people thought. And this was right after the EPA had instituted some new air pollution rules for the industry. So that drop in methane was probably due to that regulatory change.
And speaking of the EPA's methods, you penned a piece for Inside Climate News early in May, which exposed some possible underestimating of methane leaks by the EPA. Could you maybe expand on that?
Sure. This was a study that came out in a scientific journal, and it was about a particular instrument that's used to detect methane. And this is a very popular instrument used by the industry and researchers and regulators because this instrument is basically the only commercially available portable methane measurer that's easy to use. And so a lot of people are using it. A lot of people in industry use it to report their emissions to the EPA for various regulatory purposes. People in academia will use it for various studies. But the problem is the researchers who wrote this study found that there's a potential very big flaw in the instrument itself, and that because of this technical flaw in how the instrument was built, a lot of the measurements you're getting from it could be huge underestimates.
And give us an idea of the breadth of EPA studies that this could affect.
So the authors of the study cited 8 specific scientific studies that could be affected. And for that, they were just looking at studies that are out there and that are public or that have been published in journals. And this actually includes 2 studies from the EDF series. But perhaps more importantly, it calls into question all of the data that companies have been submitting to the EPA. For any person from industry who has used this instrument to measure methane leaks on their property and has submitted those numbers for the EPA then uses those numbers to estimate the methane coming from the industry. So if a lot of those measurements were flawed and have been underestimating the methane, then that would have a direct impact on the EPA numbers.
And you also cited a Harvard study that was underestimating methane leaks by possibly 2 to 3 times in the Boston area. We keep hearing this theme, which is underestimating. Are there any studies that are overestimating methane leaks?
Well, the first study that came out of the EDF series, they did find about 10% less methane than the EPA had predicted. And this brings up something that is often found in these methane studies. there are two basic ways of detecting methane and doing these studies. The first one is called a bottom-up study, and that's how the first EDF study was done. And in a bottom-up study, the scientists will go onto the site, they'll put instruments on the pieces of equipment, and they'll detect the amount of methane coming out. And then, because this is so laborious, they can only visit, you know, maybe a few sites or a few dozen sites, or maybe a few hundred at the most. And once they have these numbers, they then extrapolate to the entire shale field or to the entire country. And these types of studies tend to underestimate the amount of methane that's leaking. And people say it's probably because as they're putting these instruments out, they're not going to every place where methane is leaking. You know, there's methane leaking from various sites that these researchers don't know about, so they're not getting all of the methane leakage. And that means they're underestimating the final number. The other way to measure methane is with a top-down study, and that's what Harvard used. That's what other researchers in Colorado have used. And in those studies, you get in a plane and you have detectors and you fly over an entire shale field. So you're getting all of the methane that's coming up, regardless of exactly what piece of equipment it's coming from.
So the Boston study showed an overall leak rate of 2 to 3% in the area compared to the 1% that was estimated by Massachusetts's official state greenhouse gas inventory. But was it an apples to apples comparison? Were they using the same methodology? Why the disparity, Lisa?
You know, I'm not sure what methodology the Boston or Massachusetts regulators used in their estimate, but the top-down methodology used by the Harvard researchers was a good methodology. And one theory that they have is they could replicate the same methods in another city, but perhaps they wouldn't find as much methane leakage because Boston has a lot of really old pipes that are very leaky.
And getting back to that question of why the industry might want to throw their hat in the ring with the EDF study, besides the obvious pollution concerns, not only from a business perspective and a health perspective, there's a financial incentive to not be losing this resource as well, correct?
Sure. And that's something that EDF is constantly stressing. EDF has commissioned other studies to examine how much money the industry could save if they stopped all their leaks and reduced the amount of methane that's being released. Because if the methane is going in the atmosphere, the company can't benefit financially from selling it.
Everybody let's sing, let freedom ring, let it ring, let it ring. We got to all pitch in, do our thing, make a better world to live. We got to all pitch in, we got to do our thing, got to make a better world of them. You know we got to all pitch in, do our thing, make a better world of them.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Lisa Song. She's a reporter at Inside Climate News. So Lisa, let's talk about the political divide that a study like the Environmental Defense Funds has caused. What kind of rift has it caused within the environmental movement and then inside the Beltway?
So within the environmental movement, there's always been this tension between groups that want to advocate for bans and moratoriums on fracking and those that would rather work with the industry and help make it more environmentally friendly. So EDF obviously believes that this industry is happening. There is a lot of development going on, and it's impossible to really stop it, because when green groups are working on bans, you can ban fracking in a place where there's never been fracking, but it's pretty hard to stop it in a place where it's already started. So EDF's philosophy is, let's work with the industry out there and get them to reduce methane as much as possible. And through their efforts, they managed to get the state of Colorado to adopt the first statewide methane rules for the industry. And that's something EDF takes a lot of credit for. And there are people within the environmental movement who have some begrudging respect for EDF for doing that. And they admire that EDF has gotten real results. On the other hand, there are plenty of activists who say, when you're trying to make the industry more environmentally friendly, you're taking momentum away from people who want to ban the practice. And if you can make the industry more environmentally friendly, you're allowing politicians to favor fracking more than favoring a ban.
So EDF has reached out to the oil and gas industry and is studying methane released from natural gas. But give us a background on some of the other large environmental groups, the Greenpeaces and the Sierra Clubs of the world. Where do they stand in terms of natural gas? Do they view it as a bridge fuel, a necessary evil?
Yes, they're definitely an outlier. Most of the environmental movement is against fracking and would rather see it banned across the country. Sierra Club, back in 2010, did support fracking, and at the time, they thought it was a good bridge fuel away from coal and towards renewables. But over time, they started to backpedal. Some of the other green groups, like Greenpeace, are definitely against fracking. A lot of the environmental groups that want it banned are the smaller, more grassroots groups, especially the local groups that have sprung up in places where fracking exists. One of those, for example, is Earthworks. They're based in Colorado. There are other smaller neighborhood groups, local groups all over the country that are very against fracking. So when it comes to the environmental groups, a lot of the groups, especially the grassroots ones that are anti-fracking, they're anti-fracking not just because of methane. And most of their reasons probably have to do with fears of groundwater contamination and some of the other air pollutants that come from the industry, like local impacts from releases of toxic gases like benzene or hydrogen sulfide or formaldehyde. So methane and climate change is just one of the reasons why they're against fracking. EDF, their main scientific focus now is on the methane studies. It's only about methane from the industry. So that, I think, creates some miscommunication too on both sides, because they have different priorities.
Has EDF studied groundwater at all?
EDF has told me that they are working with some states and looking into other issues that aren't methane, but right now most of the attention and resources appear to be on these methane studies, and they've made that their flagship project.
Now what would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. Lord, I'll try not to sing out of key. I get by with a little help from my friends. I'm gonna try with the help from my friends. I get high with the help from my good friends.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Lisa Song. She's a reporter for Inside Climate News. A lot of attention has been shifted from the groundwater issue to the air pollution in terms of fracking. Is that just because we're learning more about air pollution and it's harder to study, or is it similar? The mystery that is still revolving around fracking is one that actually could help the industry, but then we see them participating in something like the EDF study. as a somebody who's studying this in a very detailed manner, where do you see this going, Lisa?
I think that depends on what regulators eventually decide to do about our energy mix in the future. There are definitely researchers I've spoken to who worry that you can study this problem to death and keep publishing more and more studies, but in the meantime, the status quo is continuing and the industry is continuing to drill. So, you know, what happens with regulations in DC and in various states will have an impact on how much natural gas is being used. And the Obama administration is in the middle of creating the nation's first methane regulations for the industry on a federal level. And EDF has been pushing for stronger regulations on that front. There are also some states that are moving to curb methane from the industry as well.
So can you give us the nuts and bolts of how methane leaks in it? Is it through the actual fracturing process when they're breaking ground, or is it the distribution of natural gas through pipelines?
It's basically through everything. Every time you have natural gas flowing through a piece of equipment, whether it's a pipeline, a storage tank, one of those small gathering lines with a valve that's near the wellhead, there's going to be opportunities for methane to leak. And that's why it's so hard for researchers to pinpoint all the sources, because there are so many different places on a well pad or on a facility where methane could be coming from.
So Lisa, is there a gold standard study for us to point to when citizens want to make an informed decision about their stance on fracking?
I think over time, more and more studies are coming out. And one thing you can look for is the study published in a peer-reviewed journal? That's one mark of quality, although it doesn't guarantee the work was well done. Another thing to do is to look at who the authors of the study are, what their affiliations are, and if they have any conflicts of interest. There was a study that came out a while back from a university researcher about they looked at a bunch of wells and found that there was no they said the risk to water contamination from fracking was low. But then there was controversy because there were some conflicts of interest about the authors that were not initially published in the study. And then the journal went back and added a correction. And that was actually done because one of my colleagues, Neela Banerjee, reported on it.
Well, you've done terrific work so far in this area. Lisa Song, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Chris Joss, Pink Floyd, James Booker, and James Taylor. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.